Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 2:16 p.m. that is Central Time in the US, and today is February 22nd. We've definitely seen a turn towards reflation in here today. The pound was up 53 ticks, up above 140 now for the first time in, feels like, rather a long time. It's going all the way back to about 2018, or the end of 2017, was the last time we saw it come back above the 140 area, and then it didn't hold it for very long. And back then it also approximated a reversion to the mean. So this is perhaps a little bit different, although we do have a short-term overbought condition. But perhaps that short-term overbought condition is justified because the UK is announcing that they anticipate having all schools open by March and an end to the lockdowns by June. And that's an accelerated program of reopening compared to just about everywhere else. So it's a testament to just how successful the UK has been in getting its vaccination program underway, and that they were able to secure more than enough doses in order to get that accomplished. It's particularly noteworthy for the UK because it went through one of the most difficult experiences with the coronavirus. So it's not quite the same when we compare it, for example, with Australia, which was able to circumvent a lot of the problems from the coronavirus, but at the same time still has a domestic population which is a long way from herd immunity. And it's a similar condition for countries like Japan or Taiwan, which did very successful measures to contain the spread of the virus, but then are going to have to inoculate large numbers of people before they can really think about opening back up again. So the pound was certainly stronger. Then when we think about some of the cruise liners, well, Royal Caribbean, for example, was up around 10% in here today, and it continues to unwind the extraordinarily deep contraction that it put in at the beginning of 2020. So they're reporting more bookings. So that also suggests that consumers are beginning to look at what the future will be, and they're obviously then also picking up deals. I've seen a number of cruise brochures come over, come through the letterbox at my own place, and they have had some really very attractive offers indeed. So consumers are obviously weighing the risk of having a cruise cancelled versus the very considerable benefits to one's pocketbook and the value opportunity that is currently being afforded to people. Well, Royal Dutch Shell has just about unwound its oversold condition relative to the trend mean. Then when we look at oil prices, they were up again in here today. So Brent crude continues to be one of the vehicles that people are looking to as a way of playing the reflation. Now, when we think about the lost production from the US as a result of the cold snap we had last week, then Texas, for example, anticipates being back to full capacity within the next week. This is really rather similar to the kind of condition we had after Hurricane Rita. I remember back then I was long of natural gas heading into the hurricane, and I thought that there was no way they were going to be able to get their production back online. So I tightened up my stop and I doubled my position, and I was wrong. I gave away what was a really very nice profit because they got their production back online way faster than I really thought possible. And since that experience 16 years ago, I've been chastened to think or to doubt the ability of oil workers to get production back online. And I think we're probably going to see another example of that on this occasion. So when we look at Brent crude, it is now coming back up into the $65 handle. It's approaching the sequence of lower rally highs. This is a clear potential area where we might start to see some resistance coming through. But That would be under normal circumstances. And right now, we're still in this extraordinary volatile environment where there's a lot of money sloshing around and people are making bets and switching between bets. Because just as we see some of the beneficiaries of the reopening starting to garner interest, I will come to the banking sector in a moment, but then it is worth considering that Tesla had been one of the clearest beneficiaries last year, but it is now pulling back. It has broken the sequence of higher reaction lows. This is a deeper pullback than we've seen in quite some time. It's somewhat larger than the one at the beginning of September. And when we pull back and look at the weekly chart, and perhaps then just look at this on a weekly basis, not a monthly basis, then we can just clearly see that there has been a significant pullback, and it is very overextended relative to the trend mean. The challenge for indices like the NASDAQ is that Tesla now represents a significant weighting, so it's an animating factor in the decline that we've seen over the course of today. But Tesla was not the leading decliner. DocuSign, Peloton, Moderna, these were all companies that did particularly well as a result of the stay-at-home trend. DocuSign is a very good example of that, but at least they have a business model. I've been using DocuSign on various occasions when people wanted me to sign things for years. But then we can look at the chart, and they have had this incredible advance between March and September, and then a significant loss of momentum since then. It's just another example of a company that has got a business and did fantastically well because of a step change in demand, but not necessarily a permanent change in demand. So it absolutely needs to hold the region of the trend mean. Then when we think about the cloud computing sector, well, it has been doing very well, and there's no questioning that. But it's not about whether it's been doing well. It's about how well can the growth persist. So it is hanging out for a reversion back towards the mean. As we move back towards reopening, well, then there's obviously going to be questions starting to arise as to was the 2020 event a one-off, and are they going to now start to have to compete much more aggressively for growth in future, or is it all going to be sustainable? Lots of people have been talking about the fact that we've had this acceleration in terms of the adoption of technologies for the cloud computing sector. And certainly, and I do apologize for not turning off the ringer on my phone, but when we then think about what's likely here, it's very likely we're going to have a reversion back towards the mean, and that would be a meaningful pullback. Then, of course, we have to start thinking about the bond markets, because a point that I've been making repeatedly is that as long as these bond yields continue to rise, then they're going to represent a headwind to growth, because it is reintroducing the discount rate. When interest rates are extraordinarily low, then nobody worries about valuations. There's no need to worry about valuation. There's nothing to compare it to. So then you can invest in growth, because they have the potential to get money for practically nothing, invest it in high risk but potentially high reward and endeavors. Some of them will be successful, some may not, but it is very much akin to a rising tide lifts all boats at some stages in the market cycle. But then when you start to reintroduce bond yields, then you start to see that pressure mounts over time. And bond yields have been rising since August, and the yield has more than doubled since then. So if we were thinking about what the valuation on a very low discount rate was in August, well, then it should be half that because the yield has doubled. And that's not at all the way that people consider the valuations of some of these very high growth companies. When we look at the yield curve overall, well, the yield curve spread continues to march higher. So the yield itself didn't hold the advance all the way up in here today. But the yield curve spread did push on to a new recovery high because the short end of the curve is compressing. The US Treasury is about to draw down over $1 trillion from the Federal Reserve. That's going to cause an issue for the banking sector because a lot of the money is going to get deposited there and it's going to push out their leverage ratios. Now, the easy answer would be to unshackle the banking sector, allow them to hold more in liquidity. There's just absolutely no political will to do that. So instead, the Fed is probably going to have to do a technical adjustment and raise the rates on the IOER rate, which is what they pay banks to park reserves. It's the interest rate that banks receive from the Fed for parking reserves with them. So that means that banks are going to start making more money. Then when we look at the steepness of the yield curve, well, banks make money off the yield curve. They can borrow short, lend long, and that's how banks classically make money. So banking stocks do continue to be a play on a steepening yield curve. The S&P 500 Banks Index is pushing right back up to the upper side of a more than 3-year range. The regional banking sector, which is really the smaller banks, has already also pushed back up towards its 2018 and 2017 highs. Goldman Sachs, if this trend persists, is likely to become the largest share in the Dow Jones Industrials, and of course that is a price-weighted index. I think it is also worth considering. There is another point about Goldman, which is particularly relevant. They IPO'd all the way back in 1999, and that was a really good time to IPO. Of course, they were right at the coalface. They were helping companies that had very little in the way of earnings to list on the stock market, and they were being gobbled up by investors at the time. And the partners at Goldman, I remember the headlines at the time, there was a lot of discussion about the move away from a partnership model and into the public sphere. And eventually, they just simply could no longer resist the temptation to list the stock. Then they successfully listed in the middle of 1999, and the share has actually only traded below the initial IPO price for perhaps a day or two, and now it's pushing on to new recovery highs and has completed a 13-year range. But it is interesting that a number of companies are now starting to also think about IPOing, and they are lots of types of companies that were family-owned, so they resisted the temptation to list over the years, but now the temptation to come to the market and achieve extraordinary valuations is proving too tantalizing to resist. So the sandal makers Birkenstock are looking at a $4 billion valuation. Those Panini collectors cards and sticker albums that I think a sizable number of us remember from our youth, they're also looking at IPOing. So those are family-owned companies that have just decided that this is a good time to IPO. It is certainly a good time to IPO. Perhaps they are coming a little bit late to the party. The IPO index does look like it is susceptible to some pause and consolidation. Then, of course, we do come to the question about how high can yields go? When will we see some effort to control the yield? And when will there be some recognition of the fact that a rising yield is going to impact the debt sustainability metrics of umpteen numbers of countries? This is not just or simply a UK or a US phenomenon. The UK yield is also pushing higher here, and against a background of a strengthening currency. Even in China, where people have been looking at the yield of around 3%, and there's been a lot of money moving into China to capture that yield, but this yield, this 10-year yield, looks like an uptrend, and that suggests that by buying 10-year yields at these levels, you may in fact lose money, but of course the renminbi, it has been strengthening, and it's still a consistent advance. But the dollar was weak today, and the renminbi was a little bit weaker. We're certainly seeing that the euro continues to strengthen. It probably has some additional room to strengthen further. The 10-year yield in Germany is also rising in here. Germany's talking about a €50 billion stimulus package. Now, the 10-year yield is up to about 33 basis points. It has been rising for the last few months, but this is right in the region of the peak from back in June and not far from the peak from back in March too. There's a lot of demand for German bonds, and the German government has had the ability to borrow at extraordinarily low levels for a really, or I guess perhaps the more correct way is that the German government has been paid to borrow at very accommodative rates for a really quite prolonged period of time. So it really does suggest that they have plenty of runway to stimulate the economy. And of course, Europe is further behind in the inoculation process than the UK or indeed the USA. So the DAX index is now right in the region of the upper side of a four-year range, and it continues to look like we're going to see additional upside here. When we think about the Nikkei, it has done explosively well over the course of the last few weeks, and it was up in additional positive territory today. So we continue to see that some markets are quite capable of pushing up out of these lengthy ranges and then rallying further and for longer than many people thought possible. However, when we then think about what's going on in Brazil, the stock market there was down rather significantly in here today, so a reversion to the mean is certainly underway, and the Brazilian real was also a little weaker in here today. But although Brazil has had a difficult time going through the pandemic, the one thing that will certainly be a highlight for them is the return to performance of industrial metals. So the LME index has, our metals index, has completed a very lengthy base formation. When we think about the very significant move we've had in copper, that is certainly garnering a lot of attention. But then we can think about the very clear base formation completion that we've just seen in tin. It's now trading at new decade highs. Then we can think about the nickel price, and we can think that certainly nickel has been subject to a great deal of volatility over the course of the last while, but it is now pushing on to new recovery highs. It hasn't really tested the 20,000 level since 2014, and all of this is very suggestive that we are moving out of a generational long period of just very low prices for industrial resources. So if we're starting to think about where the rationale for a new secular bull market is, well, it's probably in the industrial metals rather than the oil price, just because everybody knows where the oil is. There's lots of oil has been shut in because of low prices. Doesn't mean that the oil is gone. It just means that you need higher prices to bring it back into the market. That does put something of a lid on the potential for additional significant upside in oil prices. On the other hand, it takes years to develop world-class copper and resources. When we think about nickel, there is a whole new industry for nickel sulfide that needs to evolve, and that may even require an additional futures contract just because of the purity variations. Then, when we think about the outlook for industrial resources like lead, then it's been benighted, and it is also starting to firm now from the region of the trend mean, coming up off the lower side of a decade-long base formation. But all of this very lengthy or a decade-long range has to be viewed in the context of the big pop on the upside between 2007 and late 2008, the equally impressive decline, and then this very lengthy period of ranging overall. And this chart hasn't been updated, but the, I think, important point here is that we could be now moving towards more of, or I think, a more compelling argument that this lengthy period of underperformance by industrial resources is coming to an end. There's certainly more interest in the reflation theme. And that will require a great deal of infrastructure development. There will certainly be efforts underway to get lots of people back into work. There's a lot of interest in renewable energy. But the other point is that the renewables did enormously well during the lockdown phase, so they are equally at risk of additional pause and consolidation because of higher interest rates. The number one point that, for example, when we look at a company like Sunrun, they are 100% reliant on extremely low interest rates in order to cover the cost of installing their solar panels on people's houses. And when interest rates rise, then the profitability of the business goes out the window. So, as interest rates go up, then the chances are that it's going to be difficult for companies like this to continue to do well. And there are lots of companies that are extremely interest rate sensitive. So, the one thing that we can clearly see here is a rotation. And as we look at what the post-pandemic outlook will be, well, it's quite likely that debt is probably going to become more of a relevant consideration for lots of investors. And looking at the debt sustainability of a lot of developed markets, then emerging markets do look more attractive. The return to normal for a lot of other assets is also a very important factor. But then we can think about that. Technology it continues to appreciate or to accelerate in terms of the innovation, but the valuation of the shares is interest rate sensitive. So the pace of technological innovation will not be hampered by the performance of the shares, but it does mean, though, that the potential for money to be allocated to adventurous new ventures, well, that will be contained by higher interest rates. So then the question, it just always is going to come back to how high can interest rates go? And when are we going to see clear intervention to stop rates from rising? Because that's really the central question. We may now be looking at a reversion towards the mean for the Nasdaq, If that does gather pace, well, then it will, I think, become more of a relevant consideration for the Federal Reserve and other central banks. And it's at that point that it will bring forward this question about yield curve control. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.